Jovan Buha! Buha!
Yo, yo! I'm Jovan Buha, NBA reporter and analyst for Buha's Block, and welcome to another live show. On today's episode, we are going to be breaking down a massive morning in Lakerland. The Lakers finally land their center of the future in Walker Kessler on a reasonable contract, 4 years, $130 million, 32.3 AAV. I think that is fair, and I actually think it's a contract that Walker Kessler can outperform. So he was my top offseason target overall. He was my top center target, and I am ecstatic about this. I think this is a huge move for the Lakers. They landed a franchise cornerstone over the next few years. At a minimum, he's 24 years old, will be turning 25 by the end of the month. Now, it was a steep price, and I talked about this over the last few days, that if the Lakers want the sign and trade route, it was probably going to be expensive, and that it was probably going to cost both first round picks. And I asked on Lakers Collective, I posed the question to Pete and to Trevor. I said, if it costs two firsts to get Walker Kessler, like, are you doing that? And I think we were all in agreement that that wouldn't be the ideal price. You would want to keep it closer to a first, but this is what it costs. And I think with the AAV being as low as it was, and that would be the trade-off as we discussed it, it was like, okay, if you can keep the AAV low and give up a first or two, that's better than having to pay the full max or potentially pay a high AAV and give up two picks. So the Lakers do keep the AAV in a reasonable range. He ends up getting a little bit more than the max offer that the Jazz were willing to go, depending on reports, somewhere in that $28 million range. But it does cost the Lakers two first-round picks and two swaps. So the Lakers give up their firsts in 2031 and 2033. They also give up their swaps in 2028 and 2030. So they go all in with this move. And they now have one second-round pick remaining in 2033 to trade and one swap in 2032 to trade. They have no more tradable first-round picks, and it's going to be a while until they could trade a first-round pick. It's going to be, it's going to be a minute until they can actually trade. You know, like, they'll have some, because they do have a couple of these picks coming up, but they, because of the Stepien rule, they can't trade some of them. So they will be able to trade them on like draft day or whatever. But we're talking like, it's going to, like, in terms of an actual trade at like the deadline, it's going to be a while for, I mean, we're talking, several years for the Lakers to be able to move first round picks. So they are committed to this new group with Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, and Walker Kessler. And then that was not it, though. They had the flurry of moves come in terms of Quentin Grimes, who had basically been a Laker for the last couple of days. 4 years, $60 million. That comes in a bit more than the reported price. Reports out there were indicating he might be in the $10 million range. He comes in at $15 million AAV. Then they sign Mamu. I'm going to learn to say the full last name quickly, but I will say Sandro Mamu for 4 years, 52, which is also a bit higher. Then they use their room exception on Colin Sexton at 2 years, $18 million. And for the person who asked me yesterday, I don't remember your name, but shout out to you. You asked me over under 2.5 player options for the Lakers signings this offseason. I said under. I said it was a great line. I said, I'll go two player options here. I was wrong. They went player options. You get a player option. 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 Four for four. All four players get player options. So I would say, I think the Kessler deal is reasonable. And I would have been comfortable going even upwards of like 35, 37. So them landing him at 32 AAV, I think is a great value. I would say, with the exception of Kessler, which to me is more in line with his market value, between Austin, Grimes, Mamu, and Sexton, I think all of those numbers are a bit higher than I would want to pay each player individually. And also you throw in the player options, and I think most of the deals the Lakers have doled out this offseason have been player friendly rather than team friendly. And that is a negotiation thing that you should have some leverage and negotiate some of these numbers down, in my opinion. So I think the fact that some of these, I think, were higher numbers than they probably should have been, and they got the player option. Like, I think it's got to be an either or situation where, all right, you want more money, then you don't get that player option in year four, or you take more of a discount and then you get the player option. I don't think it can be both. So I would say I would classify at least, or you know, four of the five, I would classify as more player friendly contracts than team friendly contracts, with Kessler because the value, the AAV was a little bit lower. Okay, you give him the player option. I can understand that. Obviously with Austin, they were in a tense negotiation and they ended up having to give him the moon. But I would say with especially Grimes, Mamu, and Sexton, I would have liked to have seen the three AAVs either a little bit lower or no player option, and the Lakers be in control of the situation. Because now Colin Sexton right now projects to be the Lakers' sixth man. If he has a sixth man of the year type year, he could just opt out and dip. Or if these contracts don't age well, obviously when you have a player option, it could go the other way where the player underperforms and then they opt in. And now you, I mean, it's an expiring, but it's not like this great contract on your books. And it's not a Isaiah Joe or Aaron Wiggins where you're going to be able to flip them and get assets. It's, you still might have to attach something potentially or just dump them somewhere. And then now you're losing that player. So didn't love the contracts overall outside of Kessler. I think they were a combination of overpays and too player friendly with the player options. But, I want to take a step back here, and we're actually going to go into some of the familiar post-game breakdowns. So we're going to start with Buha's big picture here. And Buha's big picture is LA lands a cornerstone while taking a step back. And what I mean by this is I've been saying, as I've been previewing the offseason for the last few weeks, that my number one goal for the Lakers was for them to land a franchise cornerstone who could be a part of the future with Luka and Austin long-term. I thought that was the bare minimum thing they needed to do to have a successful offseason. It was the most important thing they needed to do because they'd had three transaction cycles where they had not landed a long-term starter, and they were on the clock here. And it was like, okay, go, you have to go get some pieces that are going to be here for the foreseeable future. You can't be recycling guys or starting guys that shouldn't be starting in certain spots. Like, you need to go get either the center of the future or the wing of the future. Ideally both, but at least one of them. And they did that. And not only did they do that, they did that by going all in. And this has been something I've criticized Rob Pelinka and the Lakers front office for years in terms of not going all in. I think they botched the end of the LeBron AD era. I think they botched the end of the LeBron era in general. And they had always had one foot in the present and one foot in the future. And they had not been able to properly balance that. And they'd built a bunch of rosters that were good, but not quite good enough to contend. Like good enough on paper to be like, okay, it's a competitive team. It's a playoff team. It's a high 40s team, maybe low 50s team, maybe even good enough to win a round, but not good enough to win a championship. And they had been collecting these assets to do some sort of big move, all-in move. I am incredibly high on Walker Kessler. I think he is worth this. I think he is worth the AAV. I think he's worth the two future firsts. I think he is the exact type of big you want in like a non all-star mold. There are real shades of Rudy Gobert here, but I think a more skilled version of Rudy Gobert. So he could give you 90% of what Gobert gives you defensively, be a similar level rebounder, but also be a much more skilled offensive player. He only played five games last year, coming off of shoulder procedure, made six threes in those five games, really flashed a high level, and you know, two of those games, he hit multiple threes. So he started to show some stretch to his game as either a guy you could just have space out or pick and pop. But he's also an elite finisher. And with that size, 7'2" with a 7'7" wingspan, he's one of the biggest players in the league. He has the seventh highest standing reach. He is just a monster. He's a monster offensive rebounder. He's a strong finisher. He's got better hands than Gobert, better touch around the basket with putbacks and hook shots. And he can seal a smaller player, catch the ball, draw a foul, score over them. And then defensively, he's primarily a drop big, but he's a true defensive anchor. He's one of these guys that post, you know, outside of Wemby and Gobert, I think he's in that next class with whoever you want to put in terms of defensive anchors. So he's that level of defender and is really good defensive rebounder. And I also think he's got more mobility than people give him credit for. Like he can, he's primarily going to be a drop big, but he can be a high drop big. He can play up to the level. He can play in a hedge and recover scheme if you need. He's not really going to be switching, so that will be one of the limitations. But the Lakers didn't, they didn't switch as much with DA as the starter. They switched more with Jackson or if it was Maxey in some of those bench groups. But I think they can play a similar defensive style with the starting group with Kessler in there and get away with it. I think he's that level of, like, not get away with it, but like, you know, thrive with him in that specific role because he's such an upgrade over DA. And the Lakers were the second worst rim protecting team in the NBA last year. They allowed the second highest defensive field goal percentage at the rim. That's gone. Like with Kessler in there, as long as he can stay healthy and he's on the floor 30, 32, 34 minutes a night, that is going to dramatically change. Now, I commend the Lakers for going all in. And to me, this automatically makes this a successful offseason. They, doesn't matter what else they did. To me, they made an aggressive offer. They pursued the RFA. They finally got an RFA moves did not happen in 6 years. So I give them a ton of credit for that. Now, the step back here is I am a bit underwhelmed with the rest of the moves here. I like Quentin Grimes, Mamu, and Colin Sexton individually, and I see the appeal with like the individual roles that they are going to play, but I am not as sold on the collective vision here. And to be fair, I have been talking about this over the past week in particular. I even talked about this yesterday when I got several questions about successful offseason, like what are your expectations for Rob? What are you thinking? And I said, and really I've been saying for like almost 2 months now, I'm confident the Lakers are going to, they're going to do the headliner. They're going to make the big move. They're going to make the big splash. They're going to get the guy, in this case, Walker Kessler. And that's great. And they're going to land the guy that wins the press conference that is the headlining piece. But I think they're going to struggle to build out a starting lineup. And I think they're going to struggle to build out a rotation. And if you look at the current form of the starting group, it right now projects to be Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, Grimes, Mamu, and Kessler. Now, I think Kessler is a better or more impactful overall defender. That, I mean, it's tough to compare guards to wings or, you know, guard slash wings to big men, right? In terms of defensive impact, like traditionally, there's a reason why bigs always win defensive player of the year because you got to protect the paint, you got to protect the rim. That's a really important position. So it's tough to compare like Walker Kessler to Marcus Smart. I would say Walker Kessler's upside is higher than Marcus Smart's upside, especially with where they're at in their career. Kessler about to turn 25, Marcus Smart's 32 with that injury history. Now, Marcus was transformative for the Lakers defense, so there's a high bar for Kessler to clear to match that. But I would lead on the side of Kessler, especially like a special defensive anchor can solve a lot of your issues in a way that just having an elite perimeter defender can't quite. Like we saw that last year with the Lakers. Marcus Smart was an elite perimeter defender. I think he should have gotten more consideration for all defense second team. The issue was behind Marcus Smart, the Lakers help rotations and their defensive anchor were subpar, and they were the 20th ranked defense. They had the second worst rim protection in the league. And that, like, there's only so much Marcus Smart could do. He can't put out all the fires. I think a defensive anchor can do that more. So from that perspective, if you're comparing like the best defender in the lineup, I do think it's an upgrade for the Lakers. But then if you look at comparing like LeBron and DA to Grimes and Mamu, I mean, if you want to say that's an upgrade, I mean, it's a downgrade in size, obviously, and overall like length, athleticism, factoring in LeBron's athleticism, you can say that's an upgrade. And, you know, that I think Grimes, to be clear, like I think Grimes is the best defender of the four. I think Mamu's arguably the worst. Like I think we're maybe underselling DA's defense here, but I would say like Mamu, LeBron, and DA, pick your order, however you want to put them, whatever. Grimes is the best one, but I don't think it's like to a degree that it changes dramatically the Lakers' defensive fortune. So basically what I'm saying is like, I think they're taking a massive step up with the defensive anchor and the defensive center spot from DA to Kessler. But I think Smart to Grimes is a notable downgrade. And now the Lakers are in this situation where with the starting group, Quentin Grimes is now both your point of attack defender and your wing stopper. And I know there's like a Grimes army out there who are your Grimes truthers who are, he just needs a starting position. He's underrated, this and that. Like, I would say at least I've tried to, like, I'm coming at this as being lower on Quentin Grimes than consensus, I would say. In the film I've watched, in the numbers I've crunched, I've gotten to the point where I talked about this yesterday, where I view him as like a 65th to 70th percentile defender, which is solid. There's people that say, if you just look at the numbers, he's an underwhelming defender. I think he's better than that. If you look at the film, there are nights he's great. There are nights he's not great. And he's an inconsistent defender with some high highs, some low lows. So I say he stabilizes as like a above average to solid defender, but I would not classify him as like a consistently good defender. I think he can be a good defender. I would not say he's consistently good. He's definitely not a great defender. And for this group that's already limited with Luka and Austin, if you are betting on Quentin Grimes to go out there and replace Marcus Smart and be your stopper in that lineup, I just think that's a bet you're going to lose. And I just don't think he's good enough. So when we look at when you're coming at Minnesota has JD McDaniels in that role. When you look at OKC has Wallace, Caruso, Dort, J-Dub, like just their plethora of guys that are all better than Quentin Grimes defensively. And then you also look at the Spurs with Harper and Castle and Vassell and Champagne. And like, I think all those guys are better than him defensively. So I'm just like, I just don't think it's good enough to be quite honest. Like, I like Quentin Grimes in a vacuum. I would have loved him in the Colin Sexton role. I would love him in a six man role. I don't love him as the primary perimeter stopper next to Luka and Austin. Now, he could prove me wrong. He could channel those good defensive nights into an every night thing. I would push back and say like, why hasn't that been a thing then? Because I think with his offensive skill set, if he defended the way he can defend consistently, then he would be a no-brainer starter. And this would be a guy making $25+ million, but that's not the case. And so you look at his career, he's bounced around multiple times. I know there's context within some of that, but like in general, he's not been a guy who's stuck in certain, in situations. He has been a guy teams have been willing to trade and pass around a bit. And he's, I think, profiles more as a bench player than a starter. So not only are the Lakers like putting him in a starting role, but they are not putting the defensive personnel around him to protect him. Like, to me, he could be the second best defender on the perimeter in a lineup, and that's a good defense. Not the primary guy. Now, I think that's overtasking him. Then we got to Mamu, who I like. We can debate whether he's more of a four or a five. I still would contend he's more of a five, but I know there are people who are adamant he's a four. Okay. I think he can play both, but the reporting came out yesterday that they view him as a Rui stopper. And I just think Rui, for as limited as Rui is defensively, and I have been probably on the lower side of Rui's defense, I think he's a better defender for like the starting four spot than Mamu is, especially with how much the Lakers like to switch. Like, I think if the Lakers are going to switch one through four, Mamu in those spots is going to hold up worse than Rui is. Now, I think Mamu is more mobile than people realize because of his size or his stature, whatever. So I think he can hold up better defensively than people think. And he's probably a better defender than people think, but he's not a rim protector. He is a good rebounder. It's a rebounding upgrade over Rui. I will say that. But maybe the overall like basketball IQ rotation stuff will be a slight upgrade, but I think Rui is a better on-ball defender than Mamu. And I think Rui fits better with what the Lakers are trying to do with their defense. So that to me, and I'm bringing up Rui just because that's been the comparison that has been made over the past day of like Mamu versus, I mean, I think they're totally different players and I don't really see the comparison. I'm just laying out if we're going to compare them, like this is my viewpoint on the comparison. So from that perspective, I'm like, I just don't think Mamu's a starter on a championship team or a starter on a contender. And I like it. Like if you want to make him the primary backup, and he even plays in two big lineups with Kessler or with DeAndre Ayton, sure, that's fine. Right now, he's a starting forward. Like, it's not Jared Vanderbilt, because Jared Vanderbilt is a fringe rotation player in J.J. Redick's eyes. It's not Jake LaRavia, because he's also become a fringe rotation player in J.J. Redick's eyes. So clearly, with you're paying Mamu that much money, he's going to be starting as of right now with the current roster. I just don't think that's good enough either. So And then Sexton is fine. I would have preferred, I think with Sexton, his defensive reputation precedes him. I think he's perceived to be a better defender than he actually is. His defensive metrics are awful in the LeBron, defensive LeBron, he's seventh percentile. That's Dalton Connect range. I don't think he's that bad of a defender, but also his defensive estimated plus minus, he's 38th percentile. So like every defensive metric paints him as a bad defender. I think he's better than that. I think he's an above average defender, but I think there's this perception that he's like Kayson Wallace out there, and that, maybe a little bit worse than Kayson Wallace or something. And it's like, no, there's a massive gap between, like, he's the guy that he looks like a good defender because he's quick and he gets in your face and he'll ball pressure. But his actual, like, perimeter defense grade is a D or D plus. Like he's every metric screams he's a negative on defense. I will give him credit and say he's a slight positive, but I would not say he's a good defender. I would not say he's a great defender. And so my big issue here is just like the Lakers, they landed the cornerstone. They went all in. I give them a ton of credit. I think that was the biggest objective for the offseason. So from a macro perspective, I think this is a win. I think this is an unequivocal win, and I do not want to take anything away. I think within the margins, they got nice individual pieces, but how they all complement each other. Like, I see the offensive side, right? You noticed I've been focusing on defense because the offensive side, I see it. I think this is going to be a great offense. Kessler in the DA role, Grimes had a down shooting season, but didn't have a down catch and shoot shooting season. I think if he cuts out some of the pull up threes, off the dribble threes, he's a above average 3-point shooter. Mamu's a good 3-point shooter, shot 39% on threes. Sexton has been quietly an elite 3-point shooter for his entire career outside of 1 year. He's been 37% or above every year outside of one. And it's been now about 5 years, I believe, of him being around 40%. So Sexton, good shooter, borderline great shooter, at least percentage wise. Mamu, good shooter. Grimes, I would say above average, somewhere between above average to good shooter. So you do lose a ton of shooting with no Luke Kennard, no Rui. You lose two of the best shooters in the league, and clearly there was going to be a downgrade there with almost any replacement, but you do add some solid shooters, solid to good shooters collectively. And the offensive, like Grimes has a bag. Grimes can attack out of the pick and roll. He could attack out of ISO. He could get out in transition. He can get downhill, put pressure on the rim, finish at the rim, get to the free throw line. Sexton similarly is a downhill attacker as well as having the shot. So like offensively, this group, I think, has top five potential in the league with Luka and Austin leading the way with their playmaking and shot creation and some of the shooting and finishing off of that. My issue is the defensive side. It kind of feels like the plan was, all right, Kessler, we're paying you all this money and go protect everything. And like, sure, there's an element of that, of Kessler's now getting a major step up in responsibility and in spotlight and pressure of, all right, you're now being propped up as that dude with Luka and Austin. You're getting paid. We gave up a million picks to get you. Now go be your prime Utah Rudy Gobert. But the rest of the supporting cast, I would say, is like average-ish to slightly above average collectively defensively. And this was a group that needed to add, I thought, at least two high-level defenders outside of the center spot, like in the perimeter group, to protect Luka and Austin and just balance out the offense defense balance. So, I mean, right now, I think Kessler's good enough, and it's a smart enough bet on him to prop up the Lakers defense to a degree. But I think there are going to be a lot of fires he's putting out on the perimeter. And this, to me, I mean, they're 20th last year in defense. Maybe they could get up to around 15th. Maybe they could even get into like the low teens. I don't think this group has top 10 defensive potential, and I don't think this is a level of defense that can hang with OKC or San Antonio in a series. Now, I want to circle back here because I have said also yesterday, multiple times the past week or so, that like there was almost no version of a Lakers roster that was going to compete with OKC or San Antonio on paper, right? And so I would agree that this group does not compete with those teams on paper. I would say even on paper, I'd probably put Denver and Minnesota ahead of them right now, especially from a starting lineup. Like the Lakers, like Kessler is obviously more of a defensive player than an offensive player. I think his offensive game is underrated, but you're not, he's not out there. But like, so like really right now, Quentin Grimes is the Lakers' third option offensively. Whereas you look at some of these other teams, like it's a Jaden McDaniels in Minnesota, or in Denver, it's a Peyton Watson or an Aaron Gordon. I just think those guys are better overall players, but also better offensive players. Or at least more reliable, more proven. Like, you know, maybe Grimes. I mean, Grimes is a good offensive player. I don't want to discredit him, but I think he's being overtasked a little bit right now as the third option on a team that wants to contend and as the primary defender. Maybe he continues to develop. He's got the dynamic with JJ. He's trained with JJ in the offseason a couple times. They have a great relationship. Maybe, you know, he's not yet in his prime. He's 26. Maybe. I could be wrong on that. If I'm wrong, I will own that. And we will have that conversation when he proves me wrong. I just think right now slotting him in that position, it's a huge bet on him becoming a certain thing. So in terms of the OKC San Antonio conversation, like there was nothing the Lakers could have done to be on that level. However, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more attention to the defensive side, because the billing here for as good as Quentin Grimes is defensively and as maybe underrated as Mamu is and overrated as Sexton is, but still like above average, you lead with the offense with all three guys. Like when you're doing the scouting report on all three guys with Grimes, it's like this dynamic, awesome scoring guard with a bag, can get to the rim, athletic, can shoot. That's the lead breakdown with Grimes. With Mamu, it's the skilled stretch big who can play at the four or the five and can shoot at a really high level, can pass and just, you know, uber skilled. With Sexton, it's the speed, the athleticism, the downhill ability, also the underrated three-point shot. It's not the defense. And that's where, like, Kessler is the defensive guy, right? But I would have liked one of those three to be more of the defensive guy than the offensive guy. And that's where I think this continues to be a blind spot with this front office in terms of, like, even Grimes and Sexton as the two perimeter guys. Grimes is 6'4", Sexton 6'2". They continue to be allergic to guys 6'6 to 6'9 and just not signing guys of that caliber. And that's where the big one to me, like we haven't even talked about, the Lakers have officially lost Rui Hachimura. They've officially lost Luke Kennard. They've officially lost Marcus Smart. Jackson Hayes, TBD, they can still technically keep him, but I wonder how he feels about a Kessler and Ayton being on the roster for now. But Smart to me is the one where I would have much preferred Smart, especially at his ends up signing 2 years, $13 million, I believe, if I saw the number correctly, in Houston. 6.5 AAV for Smart. I think Smart's just straight up better than Sexton. But for what the Lakers needed, Smart is a better point of attack defender than Sexton is. And he could have slid into the wing stopper role. So if Grimes, for whatever reason, is not defending at the level you need, you could just straight up start Smart over him, or you could close with Smart over him. But Sexton, I don't love that, because there's almost no world in which Colin Sexton is closing games. Like, you're going to be closing with Luka and Austin every single time. And I think with the money you're paying Quentin Grimes, you're locking him in as a starter. So you're not going to go Luka, Austin, Grimes, Sexton. I mean, maybe there's a matchup if a team's going super small, you go with that. But like the Sexton role to me is pretty limited in theory, whereas a guy like Marcus, I just think had more utility for what the Lakers need. And like, yeah, he's an offensive downgrade from Sexton, but I think Grimes and Sexton have some overlap with their overall offensive games and archetypes, where Grimes could do some of what the Lakers are probably going to ask Sexton to do, and you just stagger it a bit. And so it's like Grimes is the first sub, Smart comes in, and then Grimes comes in later and plays in bench groups with Luka and Austin. That's the one to me that is more of a miss. Like I see it with Grimes. I see it with Mamu. The Sexton one, especially like looking at some of the other guys, like Luke Kennard goes for $6.5 million AAV. Marcus Smart goes for $6.5 million AAV. Jordan Goodwin goes for $6 million. I know that was a situation where he's re-signing. I would take any of those guys over Colin Sexton. So, because it's not just about the offense. Like, people will look at his numbers, and I think he's an underrated passer. I think that's another thing here where they get a certain amount of passing with the bench group. But I think the Lakers need a defense. They need perimeter defense, and they did not really address that with the current additions, in my opinion. I think it's overall a bit underwhelming with the perimeter defense. The interior defense, massive upgrade, and maybe that's enough to offset the limitations on the perimeter. I just would have liked to have seen a combination of those two things rather than hoping and praying that Walker Kessler is going to save everything. And then three takeaways before we get into the Q&A. Takeaway number one. Now, this is, I like to take a step back and be like, all right, let's look at the big board here. And what did the Lakers prioritize? And the Lakers clearly prioritized youth, speed, and shooting. So Austin Reaves is now the oldest player on the roster, which is a wild thing. Austin Reaves at 28 is he's the new LeBron on the team. He's the old man because all the guys they added were between 25 and 27. So they're all in the Luka Austin timeline. And so all 27 and younger, all average to, I would say above average to good shooters. But again, Grimes, I think, is an above average shooter. And with Grimes and Sexton, there's an element of speed and athleticism that the Lakers did need with the backcourt. And so I do want to give them credit there, where Grimes and Sexton are the type of guards and perimeter guys that can hang in a series with OKC or San Antonio from a speed perspective. Now, can they hang defensively? That's a totally different question here, but more so just in terms of athlete for athlete and like those guys being able to attack some of the OKC San Antonio guys off the dribble, I think they can do that. So in terms of the vision, clearly like going younger, reshaping the roster in mid to late 20s guys, maintaining a certain level of shooting, like it's a downgrade. I mean, none of these guys are close to being Luke Kennard or Rui Hachimura. That's a like massive downgrade from that perspective of specifically shooting, but good shooters, overall good shooters. You know, they check the box of above average shooters. And then again, the speed and athleticism with Grimes and Sexton. So I see the vision with that. I think it's been out there. They've wanted to get younger. They've wanted to get more athletic. They've wanted to get, JJ talked about dribble, pass, shoot. Sexton and Grimes can dribble, pass, shoot. I just think within all that, I've not mentioned defense. So that's the one flaw that I think is still there, which brings me to takeaway number two, where I think the glaring hole on the roster moving forward is the perimeter defense. And I think Marcus is at a different level than Grimes or Sexton. And to me, if I'm the Lakers now, and if you look at the assets, they have 1 second, one swap, and some unappealing contracts to trade. Like Ayton expiring, okay, you could probably flip that somewhere. DK expiring player, still rookie deal, okay, you could probably flip that somewhere. Maybe even Jake, if there was a team that was interested in him in free agency or thinks, looks at the first half of the season more than the second half of the season, maybe someone talks themselves into Jake. I think all those contracts are movable. Vando's the one now that by going all in with your picks, you basically lost the ability to trade Vando unless you are taking on a worse contract. And the Lakers, depending, I'm going to pull it up here with their cap situation, because I've seen different numbers on the cap. I haven't quite, I mean, they're adding Sexton goes into the room exception, and then they're spending in year one projected, I mean, they're at 56 million. So they're actually gonna have to clear between Grimes, Mamu, and Kessler. It's about 56 million of incoming salary. So they are going to have to do some moves, and I want to make sure nothing else has happened, because I think they're gonna have to clear some. Okay, nothing has happened, but they're gonna have to clear some space here, and so I think there will be some other move that they make in terms of dumping somebody, because they don't have 56 million in cap space. They have 52, and that also means that they likely, unless they're flipping DA or Vando here, that also means they likely rescinded the rights to Jackson Hayes, which would mean they only have a minimum to offer him. And with the center market right now, center market's crazy. They might not be able to, I would say almost certainly would not be able to retain Jackson Hayes unless he's just like, I desperately want to be with Luka. I want to be in LA. That would be the one way. But based on the way that the contracts played out, they have spent their entire cap. They've spent the entire room exception. They're out of that. They're out of draft assets. And so they're kind of locked into this group, but I would argue they need a a true wing stopper. I don't think as of right now they have a wing stopper on the team. Maybe a do. And I haven't talked about this, so I will touch on this in with my third takeaway. Maybe a do or Cameron Carr can grow into that. But as of right now, in terms of guy and Vando, I understand that people are going to throw out Vando. JJ doesn't trust him. He's incredibly limited offensively. I just don't see Vando playing that role on this team. Among the guys who project to play, they don't have a true wing stopper, and that's an issue. On top of that, I don't think Grimes or Sexton is good enough as a point of attack guy to be the primary guy on a championship team. So that's an issue. So I think the thing for the Lakers here in the rest of free agency, as they try to build out this roster and potentially shed some salary, they have 12 guys under contract. So they have two spots that they have to fill. I think they have to go defensive. Now, maybe they get a Matisse Thybulle. Maybe they get, I mean, it'd be great to get Kelly Oubre. You're not getting Kelly Oubre on a minimum. Maybe they catch a break here. Matisse Thybulle, Josh Okogie. I don't love either one of those guys, and I don't think they're really a rotation guy on a championship team, but it would help the current situation. Like, I think they need to shed a player or two and then shuffle in some minimums and take some swings on some guys. That would be how I try to fill this out. But I think they clearly need to go defensive with the final two roster spots, and in general should be looking to make some sort of trade now or ahead of the deadline where they add in some more defense, because I think that's the offensive side. I see it. I see top five, if not top three potential. The defensive side, I still think they probably top out as around average. And then takeaway number three is a huge bet here on a Theo and Cameron Carr. Because if you just look at the current rotation, and I will pull it up for you guys, I broke it down on X. This is the Lakers' current rotation right now. So you see, and I will, here's the Lakers' current rotation. So Luka, Austin, Grimes, Mamu, I'll say Mamu Kelechvili, that I got to practice saying that in the mirror a bunch of times. Walker Kessler, and then bench, Colin Sexton, DeAndre Ayton, Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt, Adu Theroux, Cameron Carr, Bronny James, Delta Connect. We can debate the order of the bench guys. I think the top two are locked in. I would say based on last season and JJ's proclivities, I would tentatively slot Jake LaRavia as the eighth guy. And then Adu and Cameron Carr, though, are the two guys I look at that there is a version of this where Adu and Cameron Carr both hit and both check the boxes of what the Lakers need. And Cameron Carr is that point of attack guy with his length and can be an effective help defender and rotator. And Adu is the wing stopper. Now, Cameron Carr needs to get better defensively. He needs to be better on the ball and he needs to fill out physically. And Adu needs to get better offensively. Like he's borderline unplayable offensively with his current skill set and just how raw he is. So if Adu can continue to develop and flash here and develop as a shooter, those are the two wild cards right now within the Lakers rotation in terms of being that. I mean, obviously you can mention Bronny if you want, as he showed some point of attack ability and some defensive playmaking in his limited stints. But I think the swing guys here to me are Adu and Cameron Carr. And if they can outplay Jake LaRavia and Jared Vanderbilt, and I think it's a relatively low bar to clear. I think it's within the realm of possibility that they can, but it is also a tall task to be like, hey, Adu Theroux, Cameron Carr, year two guy, year one guy, respectively, you are like our primary defenders or playing a certain amount of time on a team with championship aspirations. It'd be great if they do that. And the Lakers are obviously making that bet to some degree that they can do that. But the reason I not mentioned them up until this point was because I think as of with the current information we have, I think they both project as more fringe rotation guys. And I would pencil in tentatively Jake LaRavia and Jared Vanderbilt ahead of them based on seniority, status, the way that JJ operates the rotation. He tends to give the veterans a shot first before the younger players. He also, obviously, Adu didn't really have a stable spot in the rotation. So we'll see. What they invested a ton in Cameron Carr in terms of trading up for him, you know, keeping their first round pick, didn't trade it. Adu is someone they have high aspirations for. So I think we could be looking at a reworked rotation here where it is Sexton, Ayton, Theroux, Carr, and that top nine, if it forms, I do like more than the current projected top nine with Jake and Vando in there. But I would say with the current information we have, and we don't know where Adu and where Cameron are going to be in year two and year one, respectively, this is a pretty shallow bench. This is not the Oklahoma City Thunder. This is not the San Antonio Spurs. This is not the New York Knicks. The Knicks just lost Mitchell Robinson. Their bench is better than this one. And so that's where the Lake, like, again, if Adu and Cameron pop, which is like a very optimistic purple and yellow colored glasses take, this bench looks a lot better and the Lakers' needs are somewhat filled. If it does, if they don't, and like it would not be out of the realm of possibility that they don't, based on them being second and first year players who have some pretty clear flaws or limitations in their game, then this gets grim quickly, because after Colin Sexton and DeAndre Ayton, you don't trust anybody in this rotation to play at, like, throw this group against OKC, San Antonio, New York. That's the standard. I think the Lakers have seven rotation guys right now. I would not trust Jake or Vando in any of those series. And Adu or Cameron Carr would have to show me it in summer league, in training camp, in the preseason to get me to that level. So as of right now, I view the Lakers as having both an incomplete and flawed starting group and an incomplete and flawed bench. And that's where, you know, that's why I bring it back to the big picture. I think they took a step back. I think on paper, this is a worse team than it was last season. I think like that March version of them, of course, you know, they're playing their best basketball, but like the March healthy Lakers, I think would beat this team in a seven game series as currently constructed. And so for me right now, coming out of this, I have them overall for me fifth in the West as of right now. I will keep them ahead of Houston because it's more so to do with Houston than anything. And we saw a compromised version of the Lakers beat the Rockets, who are, I mean, they missed KD and obviously no Van Vliet or Adams, but like that version on paper, I mean, there's a reason why it was the 13th biggest upset in NBA history. And so for those who saw my West tiers, I had the Lakers in tier two with Denver and Minnesota. I think right now on paper, Denver and Minnesota have better teams. Now we'll see what happens with the Peyton Watson, Cameron Johnson, Christian Brown situation in Denver. And maybe they make a big move. They get off Aaron Gordon. That would change how I view Denver. I would have to see what the final roster looks like. They lost Tim Hardaway Jr. They might lose Spencer Jones in restricted free agency. I haven't seen any updates on that. And then Minnesota, depends how you feel about LaMelo Ball, but I still think the core, I mean, the core of Ant, McDaniels, and Gobert is proven to a degree. They had a plus seven net rating last year together as a trio. I'm not a LaMelo guy per se, but I see the vision, at least offensively. Maybe we could debate Lakers versus Minnesota for fourth best team in the West, but I do not think they are materially closer to beating OKC or San Antonio as of right now. I think like Kessler's a big step in the right direction long term, and I think is a franchise cornerstone, which makes this a successful offseason. And now you have Austin, Luka, and Kessler moving forward, and you build around it. But I think the championship version of this team has Quentin Grimes in the Colin Sexton role, has a legit, you need the OG Anunoby, you need the Josh Hart, you need the Mikhail Bridges in there, the JD McDaniels or the Wallace or the Caruso. Like, I just think you need a different level of defender in that spot. And then I also would like a more dynamic athletic four. Like we talked about John Collins or, actually kind of fell off a cliff after that one. But this group, like offensively, I think it's gonna be a great starting group. I think it's going to be a middling defensive group, maybe slightly above average, but definitely not good or elite. And then the bench, Sexton and Ayton, and then not much else. So we'll see. I could be like, I want to be clear here that I'm coming off more so pessimistic along the margins or some of the smaller moves they made. The Kessler move, I think, is a home run. I think it has grand slam upside potential. Like, I think it was a no-brainer to get him at that cost, locked up for 4 years. It's difficult to pry an RFA. So that's a win for the Lakers and the organization and the front office. They went all in. I've been criticizing them for years for not going all in. They did their all-in move. So I do want to be clear with this. I'm giving them a ton of credit for that. I just think one of my concerns with them, and I know many of you share the same concerns because I've answered the questions has been like, what's the vision here? How do you build out the starters? How do you build out the rotation? And I think they are starting a sixth man as a number three and as a primary defensive stopper. And I think they're starting a good bench big as their starting four. And I just think they have two bench players in there who should not be starting. And then Colin Sexton, I think, should be Marcus Smart. But that's my take, my 45-minute take on the Lakers and the moves of the day. So shout out to the chat. Shout out to the late night gang. Paul notes, Pelinka fumbled 2026, trade two unprotected first, SMH. Thank you for the super chat. They are locked into this core for the foreseeable future. I think the supporting cast is a little underwhelming, but we'll see. Maybe Grimes is ready for the role that the Lakers aren't trusting with him. Mamu continues to ascend. Sexton in a bench six-man role. You know, we'll see. A little underwhelmed. I think all three guys are properly solid as like sixth, seventh, eighth men on a real championship team, but we shall see. But I appreciate you guys.